Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, the film Malcolm X.
Today I want to talk about Malcolm X because we have just passed the 30th anniversary of Spike Lee's epic film, which originally came out in 1992, and the Criterion Collection has a marvelous looking new edition of it out with various extras, and I think that it's still a timely movie. This great biopic, this great movie all about the life and times of Malcolm X. It's a long movie. It's over 30 hours long. Excuse me. That's wrong. It's over 3 hours long, 30 years old, 3 hours long. And it didn't do awfully well at the box office when it first came out, probably because it's over 3 hours long. But it's still quite a marvelous movie. And now, thanks to the magic of home video, you don't have to sit in the movie theater and watch it for 3 hours plus. You can hit the pause button whenever you feel like it. So it's a terrific movie. And I think it's well worth celebrating on this just past the 30th anniversary of it. When he was making Malcolm X, Spike Lee heard a constant plea from people on the street he passed, just people he didn't know, strangers who'd heard or read that he was making a movie about Malcolm X, and people would shout out to him, "Don't mess this up, Spike, don't mess up Malcolm's life." And he hoped he wouldn't, and he wanted to satisfy all those people. At the same time, though, there were some very prominent black people in American cultural life who were very fiercely skeptical whether a commercial filmmaker like Spike Lee could make a worthwhile movie about Malcolm X. Another controversy that came up when the movie was first being made is that originally a white filmmaker was slated to direct this movie for Warner Brothers, the great studio, Norman Jewison, who had a good track record of making politically active and very progressive, politically progressive films. And he was going to make this movie, and Spike Lee raised a big ruckus. And he said, "A white person can't handle this subject. This has got to be done by a black person, and I'm the right black person to do that." By this time, Spike himself had made a few movies, and he felt that finally he was ready to make this film. And he did make it, and he got into conflicts with the studio because of the long running time and all of that. But it turned out to be, I think, quite a splendid movie. Not necessarily Spike Lee's very greatest movie. I think his greatest movie is still Do the Right Thing, which came out a bit earlier than Malcolm X. But it's still quite a remarkable movie. So, Malcolm X, the Spike Lee film, is closely based on the autobiography of Malcolm X, which Malcolm X himself wrote, published back in 1965. He wrote it along with the author and journalist Alex Haley. Lee says in one of the extras for this new Criterion Collection edition that he still rereads the autobiography of Malcolm X every year, and he starts his adaptation of the book with his own kind of gut punch contemporary impact, stuff that was very timely when this movie came out in the early 1990s. You have the opening titles of the film, of course, telling, among other things, that Denzel Washington will play the leading role. But behind this, you see an American flag going up in flames, and intercut with that are images of urban conflict and violence, including the infamous police beating of the motorist Rodney King, which had just happened in 1991, just shortly before this movie was being made. Now, of course, this is still so timely. Even though the beating of Rodney King took place back in the early 90s, since then, police violence, police killings of black people have regularly been compared with the beating of Rodney King. So we look at this footage, which is more than 30 years old now, but we can very much think about things that are going on in our own day. And of course, the beating of Rodney King sparked terrific, ferocious riots in Los Angeles and elsewhere. When the police officers who did that were acquitted, just as Lee was wrapping up his production of Malcolm X. Anyway, that's how Spike Lee starts the movie to show, I think, right away, that this is not going to be some historical movie that looks back at the past. It's going to be a movie that has tremendous impact to the present world of the early 90s, and I think it still has tremendous impact to the present world today. Anyway, once the story itself starts, once Spike Lee actually gets into the life story of Malcolm X, oh, the mood changes drastically. We meet Malcolm X when he was a young man. His name then was still Malcolm Little, the name he was born with, played by Denzel Washington. And in his early days, he was a hustler, and he was known as Detroit Red because he had this reddish hair. There's a lot of scenes in the early part of the film of his straightening and dyeing his hair. And he is jiving and jazzing with his homeboy Shorty, a musician played by Spike Lee. And they're just strutting up and down the streets in their zoot suits and doing their fancy walks and winking at all the girls and all this stuff. At the same time, however, Malcolm is repressing his own traumatic childhood memories of when his father was murdered by violent racists. And then his mother went through a horrible mental decline, really just lost her capacity to function. And then Malcolm himself went into years in foster care. And all of this we see in the movie in brief flashbacks. Some people have criticized this part of the movie because it deals with events and people that don't have much to do with Malcolm's mature life and his historical importance, but Spike Lee felt that the youthful escapades and torments undergone by Malcolm X were integral to his life story, and they certainly launched the movie with a whole lot of energy and dance. Spike Lee has always loved the old Hollywood Technicolor musicals, and this movie pays tribute to those. The first shot, which is a hugely complicated outdoor shot with Malcolm and Shorty strutting down the street. This shot, moving camera shot, cost them more than $1 million all by itself at the very beginning of the movie. And again, it launches the movie with a whole lot of energy and color. But then the movie gets into more serious stuff. And it continues in different stages. And each stage has its own distinctive look. Malcolm migrates to Boston in the 40s, and he has some wild times there too, along with Shorty, his musician friend, played by Spike Lee, and a new white girlfriend. Then he moves to Harlem in New York City, and he becomes a protege of a numbers runner named West Indian Archie, played by Delroy Lindo. And after a while, West Indian Archie attacks Malcolm over a disputed bet. So Malcolm flees Harlem and goes back to Boston and sets up a small-time burglary ring. And there he and Shorty are arrested and go to jail. And during his prison stretch, Malcolm meets an inmate named Baines. There was no such person in real life. It's really a composite of different people. But in the movie, it's an inmate named Baines, played by Albert Hall, who tells Malcolm about Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam, which then was a rising organization. And of course, it celebrated blackness and it demonized whiteness. And this just strikes a powerful chord in young Malcolm. 6 years later, he leaves prison. He goes to Chicago and meets Elijah Muhammad, beautifully played in the film by Al Freeman Jr., changes his name to Malcolm X, regards now Malcolm Little as a slave name, so he calls himself Malcolm X, goes back to Harlem, and he becomes an important and hugely charismatic spokesperson for the ideology of Elijah Muhammad and the Black Muslims, the Nation of Islam. And Malcolm also meets and marries Betty Sanders, played wonderfully by Angela Bassett, the only substantial female character in the film. But Malcolm's influence arouses jealousy and highly placed Black Muslims who turn against him. So he's now got enemies within the movement. And then he finds out that Elijah Muhammad has fathered any number of children with teenage girls in his flock. And this is just completely hypocritical. It goes against everything, all the moral teachings that Elijah Muhammad has been preaching. He himself has been violating them and fathering children left and right. And Malcolm then gets completely disillusioned with Elijah Muhammad, but he doesn't get disillusioned with his Muslim faith. And in the last great stage of his development, Malcolm makes the mandatory Islamic pilgrimage to Mecca, and there he discovers that people of all colors and all races, including Caucasians, can be devout Muslims and loving human beings. And this completely changes his attitudes. So Malcolm then makes a final break with Elijah Muhammad, changes his name again from Malcolm X to El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz. He founds his own organization, a racially tolerant organization called the Organization of Afro-American Unity. Thugs firebomb his home. He still has a lot of powerful enemies. He barely escapes injury, but then he is killed famously, infamously. In 1965, he is gunned down while giving a speech in a Harlem auditorium. And it's never been totally clear whether the assassins came from the Nation of Islam, or maybe the FBI, or maybe the CIA, or maybe all of them, but Lee believes that it was black Muslims who were to blame for assassinating Malcolm X in 1965. And that provides, of course, the great tragic climax of the movie. Although, after that, there's a kind of a little extra ending tacked on the movie. Spike Lee was always, never wanted to be identified as an angry black man, even though he is, in many ways, an angry black man. He didn't want people to be able to write him off that way. So after we have the assassination of Malcolm X, which of course provides the tragic climax to the movie, to the story, we then have this ending where we underscore Malcolm X's enduring importance with a rapid-fire montage of faces and voices. There are archival shots of Malcolm X himself. There are words of tribute spoken by Martin Luther King. The eulogy delivered at Malcolm X's funeral by the very great Ossie Davis, great actor who's been in a number of Spike Lee's movies. School children who shout out their solidarity with Malcolm X. And a Malcolm X quotation spoken by Nelson Mandela, who is one of the few civil rights champions that have stature as towering as Malcolm X's. And interestingly, Nelson Mandela, then a great leader still in South Africa before his death, he wouldn't repeat the words of Malcolm X that appear in the closing credits of almost every Spike Lee film, by every means necessary. Nelson Mandela was happy to appear at the end of the film Malcolm X, and he was happy to say the things that Spike Lee wanted him to say, but he wouldn't say those famous words of Malcolm X, by any means necessary, because of how easily his enemies in the South African government could twist those words to make Nelson Mandela appear to be an advocate of violence. So Spike Lee solves this brilliantly by cutting from Mandela saying words right up to that point, and then a clip of Malcolm himself proclaiming those four mighty words. And it's the only time we hear Malcolm X's own voice on the soundtrack. We hear his words a lot on the soundtrack, but they're spoken by the star, Denzel Washington. And so this gives a beautifully hard-hitting finish to a monumental movie that remains, as I said before, really, really timely in the middle of today's racial frictions, which are still going very strongly. So I can't say that Spike Lee made a total masterpiece here. Again, I don't think this is his greatest film. I think that I think that Do the Right Thing is his greatest film. And also his recent film, Black Klansman, is an astonishingly good film. I recommend these highly. His movie 25th Hour, which deals largely with white people, is another one of his greatest films. I'm not sure that Malcolm X quite rises to the level of those films, but it is still such an enormous achievement. A movie more than 3 hours long that covers the whole life story of Malcolm X, gets it all in there, all the horrors he faced, all the triumphs that he had, and it doesn't mince any words about the Nation of Islam and Elijah Muhammad's ideology, showing that it really is an ideology. And showing that Malcolm X eventually got beyond the most questionable parts of that ideology. We do, after all, have here Elijah Muhammad taught that 6,000 years ago, white people were cloned by the devil and were actual demons unleashed on the world. And this kind of thing, which, however, one might be suspicious of and even hostile toward the white people of America, it really is pretty crazy stuff. And eventually Malcolm X really did break away from that. and realized that racial solidarity, that having allies among people of other races was really the way to go, and that white people are not demon. They may be misguided, they may be deluded, they may be wrong about all sorts of things, and they may do all kinds of bad things a lot of the time, but they are not demons. And this movie really shows how Malcolm X got past that part of the black ideology, the black Muslim ideology, and forged his own way of thinking, and his own much more racially tolerant way of thinking. And it is very tragic that he was gunned down just as he was making real progress with his own organization of what he called Afro-American unity. The very end of Spike Lee's very greatest film, Do the Right Thing, has a photo, and this appears during the film as well, of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King together, smiling and obviously getting along very beautifully, showing that in the long run, ultimately, there is no real conflict between, or there was by the end of Malcolm's life, there was no real conflict between the message of peace, love, and nonviolence preached by Martin Luther King and the message of racial self-expression, racial self-defense that Malcolm X taught and preached during his life. Ultimately, these two men were coming more and more together. Malcolm X is an epic film. It's a brilliant film in so many ways. It is now available in a terrific new home video edition from the Criterion Collection. I could not recommend it more highly. This white guy could not recommend this movie more highly. See Malcolm X. It's a fabulous movie, just past its 30th anniversary, and I am thrilled that it's still very much with us. And that is my racial solidarity story this week.
Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus. The film, Malcolm X.